This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Our first question comes from Steve Armand in California. The February talk with Dr. Messenger about using laser interferometers to detect gravitational waves got me thinking. Since gravitational waves distort space-time, would it not be possible to measure time being warped instead of looking for mechanical change in the length of the laser beam?
I see multiple problems with this that make it incredibly difficult to use time dilation to measure these types of oscillations. First, as you mentioned, you have to correct for relativistic effects. If the magnitude of this correction and the uncertainty in the correction is much higher than the signal expected from the gravitational waves, you will not be able to detect gravitational waves very easily. Second, you just can't measure the time at the locations of these two clocks. You actually have to transmit the times from both clocks to an observer so you can see the shift in the time of one clock relative to the other. In transmitting the clock signals, you will need to convert the signals into electromagnetic waves, and the time it takes these electromagnetic waves to travel to the observer will also be affected by the gravitational waves. Given this, it just seems much easier to look at the interference pattern formed after recombining the two parts of a laser beam that have passed through a beam splitter.
Our next question is from Sean Mulcahy, who asks, most stars are in binary systems, but our own sun is more unusual as it's on its own. I've heard it said that it could be part of a binary system, but we just haven't detected our partner yet. What's the current thinking on this idea?
I had not encountered any discussion on this topic before, but apparently it's a well-known issue in stellar astronomy. Charles Latta, in a paper published in 2006 in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, provides a good review on this topic. In his introduction, he even comments on how people had previously expected most stars to be binary stars and how the sun was thought of as an unusual exception. But when you dig into the data, only slightly more than half of all sun-like stars are thought to be parts of binary star systems. About the same fraction of more massive hydrogen-burning stars are in binary systems. But when you look at red dwarfs, only about 20% of those stars are in binary systems. Given this, it's not too surprising that the sun is not in the binary system after all. It also seems very unlikely that the sun has an undetected stellar companion. If it had a hydrogen-burning stellar companion, we would have already seen it and would probably even have a mythological name. If it was a brown dwarf, which is a type of object that is smaller than the star, not massive enough for nuclear fusion to start in its core, then it is possible that it would have been difficult to detect with optical telescopes, but it almost certainly would be the type of thing that would have appeared very prominently in one of the infrared or sublunar all-sky surveys in the recent past. Any undetected companions to the sun would have to be planet-sized objects out in the outer solar system. It's also very unlikely that the sun had a binary companion in the past. It would simply take a lot of energy to eject an entire star from orbit around the sun. Either the sun never had a companion, or we would be able to see the companion today.
Brilliant. Thanks for clearing that one up, George. Our final question comes from Mark C., who asks, can you tell me what the brightest planets are as viewed from the other planets? I.e., if I were standing on Mars, would Jupiter be the brightest thing in my sky apart from the sun? Or would the Earth or Venus be brighter because they are closer to the sun and therefore reflect more sunlight? What about way out at Neptune? Would Uranus, Saturn, or Jupiter be the brightest?
This is not a trivial question to answer. Instead of staying up very late at night playing Bioshock, I stayed up very late at night working on deriving the equations needed to calculate the brightness of one planet as seen from another planet. And I also got some very useful help from Ian McDonald on this. If I got the calculations correct, Venus is the brightest planet that you would see from another planet on Mercury, Earth, Mars, or Jupiter. If you're on Venus, the brightest planet that you would see in the sky is Earth. And if you're on Saturn, Uranus, or Neptune, the brightest planet in the sky is Jupiter. When observing from a planet in the inner solar system, Venus looks bright not because it's closer to the sun, but partly because it is closer to your planet than the gas giants in the outer system, and partly because it reflects a higher fraction of the sunlight falling on its surface than any of the other planets do. And the term for the fraction of light that's reflected by a planet is called albedo. So Venus has one of the highest albedos of any object in the solar system, if not the highest albedo. When observing planets from one of the gas giants, though, Jupiter appears brighter, partly because it has a large diameter, and partly because the distance light travels from the Sun to Jupiter when it appears at its brightest to your planet is smaller than the equivalent distances for the other gas giants.
Great. Well, that's an interesting one that we can hopefully verify in the near future, far future, when we end up landing on those planets.
Or we may already be able to see this in some of the observations of probes that have been sent into the outer solar system.
Very true. Thanks a lot, George, for answering all of our questions.